All right, so let's call this meeting to order, the June 9th meeting of the Salem Parks and Recreation Advisory Board. I'm Dylan McDowell, the chair. Let's jump right into our roll call. Keith Norris.
I'm here.
Alan Alexander is absent. Woody Dukes.
Present.
Dave Friedenmaker.
Here.
Rick Hartwig.
Here.
Alan Holland.
Here.
And Joan Lloyd.
Here.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for being here. Happy June, everybody. We got a master plan to talk about today, as well as following up on some communication from our board to council. Excited to hear more about both of those. Let's start with our minute adoption. Does anyone have any adjustments or edits to the minutes from the last meeting?
Move to adopt.
Move to adopt. Do we have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Al. All right. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And any opposed, say nay. All right. The minutes are adopted. Let's jump right into our public comment. I know we didn't have anyone signed up and no official members of the public, although Paul Rice is, we know you are a member of the public now. I obviously recognize all the service you had to SPRAB, so I want to give you a chance if there's any public comment you were hoping to provide tonight. Oh, I'm wondering if he is not able to unmute himself because he's not a co-host. Let's see, let me do the ask to unmute to make sure, give Paul a chance. And you're unmuted, Paul. Is there, did you have public comment or were you just joining to listen tonight? Not able to hear you if you are speaking, unfortunately. All right, well, we will move on. Paul, if you do have comments, please email Tony or myself and we can try and get you back in the queue here if it's due to technical difficulties. So otherwise, I appreciate having you here tonight. And for those of you that have not met Paul before, Paul was a longtime board member of SPRAB and I'm excited to have him. He's also a fellow West Salemer, so excited to have Paul here tonight. All right, well, let's go into any other public comments. Sorry, I just wanna look around one more time. No, I don't see anyone else joined. So as I mentioned, tonight we're going to hear about the Bailey Ridge Master Plan. Tony, I know you're going to be helping kick that off. So I think without further ado, we can jump right in.
All right. We'll get that uploaded here in just a moment. Okay, good evening, everyone. My name is Toni Whitler. I am a Parks Planner with the City of Salem. And tonight we are presenting the Bailey Ridge Park Draft Master Plan. I apologize for any outside noise you might hear. If you could please go to the next slide. Thank you. Our project team, myself, Toni Whitler. I'm project manager for the master planning effort, along with Patricia Farrell, our now retired Parks and Natural Resources planning manager, who oversaw this project for the majority of the planning effort. And with us this evening are Cameron McCarthy, landscape architecture and planning consultants. We have Colin MacArthur, a principal planner, and hopefully you can raise his hand if you can see him. And Liz Auble, landscape architect and project manager, and Victor Garcia, designer. So our agenda this evening will focus on the park planning process and the timeline. We'll talk about the existing conditions present at the park, and also look at opportunities and constraints to development at the site. We will talk about the public engagement process and feedback received, the conceptual designs that led to the draft park master plan, and then we'll have a question and answer period. We'll be asking the board tonight to endorse the plan and make a recommendation to City Council to approve the draft park master plan as a master plan at their July 25th meeting. We've changed that date, moved it out from what was indicated in your staff report. It was June 27th, but we're needing just a little bit more time just to refine the report so we can give council a good solid package. So we move that out to the end of July, July 25th. And this is our project timeline for the public engagement process. So that started with the first open house on January 26th. And we'll go into detail about these here in just a moment. March 16th, second open house, on to April 27th, our third and final open house or workshop, as we call them. I took, at the third open house was when we had the preferred concept that became the draft park master plan that I took to the Southwest Association of Neighbors, or SWAN, on May 3rd, and presented that to them. And now we are bringing it to the board tonight on June 9th. And then with your approval, it will go forward to City Council on July 25th. So this is the service area for Bailey Ridge Neighborhood Park, and our Comprehensive Park System Master Plan defines a neighborhood park service area as a half mile. This is not quite a half mile only because it's bounded. The red line is the UGB. The yellow line defines the park. The shaded purple area is the service area. And it's actually extended a little bit to the north past the city limit line, which is in black and gold, just to capture that little bit of neighborhood that abuts the Elahi Country Club and Golf Course to the north there. To the east is Minnow Brown Island Park. And then to the north, northwest, and to the south is all rural area. And then, of course, River Road runs along the south and actually defines that UGB there. And then I'm going to turn it over to Cameron McCarthy to move forward and talk about existing conditions.
Thank you, Tony, and good evening, board members. My name is Colin MacArthur. I'm principal and director of planning at Cameron McCarthy, and I'm joined by Liz Auville and Victor Garcia, and we're excited to present the Bailey Ridge Park Master Plan to you all tonight and to walk you through the process that we use to arrive at this master plan. Tony showed a timeline that was roughly 6 months for our design and public involvement process. Really, this project began last year. It was about a 7 or 8 month project. And the first activity we did was to conduct a site visit on site with our staff and City of Salem staff to walk the site, identify existing conditions, identify opportunities and constraints, and then to evaluate all that through site analysis. So I will share some of our observations from existing conditions to start. First of all, we found the site to be particularly unique and notable in the variety or type of landscapes that it contains. The northeast, really third of the site is dominated by a dense, closely planted, shaded dug fir forest. As you move into the middle of the site, that transitions into an upland area with a small entrance that has been created off of Tayside Street with some gravel and some benches, a small public space. And then moving further to the west, we have more upland area. We have a wetland that is identified in blue that extends down the site and connects to the swale. And then we have a Scotch pine woodland to the southwest that is not in particularly good health, but does contain a different variety of trees than we found on the other side of the site. And then in the middle of the site, we of course have Chambers Swale that bisects the site And that is characterized by some erosion, some downcutting, incising, and some invasive species were found along the swale, as well as a few in the wetland area. Along the swale, there are some notable features. There are several really high quality white oak specimens, and then there are several fruit trees that have been planted over time that are within this this upland area. So using this as a basis, we then moved on to identifying opportunities and constraints. And to do this, we divided the site up into six areas: Doug Fir Forest, which is dense again and is on a slope that is somewhat limiting. We have an entrance area. It's visible from Tayside Street. It's open, it's relatively flat. There are already features there. That's identified as number two. There is a Scotch pine woodland that's in the southwest. And the trees are not particularly in good health. There's opportunity for some thinning, tree removal, opening up more space for passive recreation uses. We've got the upland area in the middle. We think in that there's opportunity for trail benches, as well as doing restoration of the wetland and additional landscape planning. And then we have the Chamber Swale, identified as Area 5, that does bisect the site. So we think there needs to be and should be an opportunity to connect across the site, across the swale, bridge the two sites together in combination with swale or channel restoration. And then there are a couple other opportunities to provide better access or connectivity. There's a north entrance or north access that's unimproved off Ilhi Court that's shown in the red dashed line number six. And then there's another connection further to the east near Dublin Avenue. I will say that we found that views are particularly remarkable, notable when you get up into the northwest portion of the site, views looking out to the east. And those viewpoints are shown with the arrows, blue arrows on this map, good views looking out over the neighborhood towards Tayside Street. And then also looking up to the west along Chambers Swale. That view could be enhanced, of course, with some restoration. And then within the woodland areas, I think there's definitely some opportunity for thinning in the within the Doug Fir Forest to improve tree health in general, and then get more light visibility in there. And then we think the Scotch pine woodland is struggling with the wet soil conditions and the wetlands, and that just may not be the right landscape site for this site. So I think you'll hear about our concepts more, which are building off of these natural features, but overall we did find significant natural features that were worthy of preservation and enhancement, but also want to emphasize there is opportunity, introduce some limited active elements, and then opportunity to improve the site for primarily passive recreation. And with that, I will transition over to Liz, who's going to provide an overview of our public involvement and an outreach approach.
Thanks, Colin. So Tony touched a little bit on the timeline or the order of the events, and I'm just going to elaborate a little bit on the methods we used and the different types of events. So our methods included print materials, including postcards that went out to residents, as well as signage at the park. We used email updates and social media posts, and information was also provided on the project website. And then our events included three workshops that were held via Zoom, and they were accompanied with three online surveys that would run like the start date of the event and then following the workshop for people to provide input. There were also Q&A discussions at each workshop, and we had an opportunity to gather feedback during those. And then there was always opportunity to provide comments and questions to us or the city via phone or email. And then, let's see, Colin, do you want to go over the first meeting? Thanks.
Sure. Thank you, Liz. So I'll provide a quick overview of each workshop and the what we executed or what we presented at each workshop, and then the key findings. And so we're gonna, this presentation is not perfectly linear in that I'm gonna describe what we did at each workshop, and then Liz is gonna come back and talk about the concepts more in detail, and then how we arrived at the preferred concept. So I'll give you an overview of each workshop. So the first virtual open house was held on January 26th of this year. We had 22 attendees, and the primary focus of that workshop was to review our findings from site analysis, opportunities and constraints, to talk about typical improvements and amenities that are standard or optional for City of Salem parks, and then to take question and answers and input on desired amenities. And we followed up workshop one, or in conjunction with workshop one, we conducted a survey. That survey asked residents what they like about the park, concerns, what improvements interest them. We found that most of the participants were from the neighborhood, do visit the park often, and the appreciation for the natural character, existing landscape, which I mentioned following up the existing condition and site analysis. We did ask about preferred amenities and priorities for amenities, and we found that the top five requested or most interested amenities were hard and soft surface paths or trails, quiet space for relaxation, sitting, wildlife observation, open lawn areas or grassy areas for informal play, benches, seating. And then there was strong interest in children's play, and it's particularly nature play, a more specialized type of playground. And we'll talk more about that in the concepts. Moving on to, and yeah, these were survey results that I just ran through that focus on more of our passive amenities rising to the top of the list. I think we can go to Open House 2. Open House 2 was conducted on March 16. We had 14 attendees for that virtual workshop. We shared out the findings from the first workshop and the survey. And then we reviewed or presented three design concepts. And Liz is gonna share those with you after I get through this overview. We followed up, or in conjunction with that, we did another online survey. This time we had over 100 respondents, and survey focused on asking participants which concept they preferred and which design elements within that concept were preferred in their locations. And as we get into the concepts, you'll see that most of the concepts contain similar elements, but there are some elements that are unique to on each concept that differentiate them. The cut to the chase, or the end of the story, found that most residents, or participants, excuse me, by a wide margin, almost 2-1, preferred concept 3. And we'll show you what that is. And that ended up being the basis for our preferred design concept. The third open house was conducted on April 27. We had a little lower attendance, 10 attendees. And then we reviewed the survey two results, the findings from the first two workshops, and then presented the preferred concept. And within that concept, we asked participants through a survey that received 80 respondents to prioritize their top improvements to implement within the park. And we found that paths, and particularly accessible paths, were the top priority. Habitat restoration along Chamber Swale was also a priority. Thinning or improving the health of Douglas Fir Forest, constructing a crossing over Chamber Swale, get from one side or the other in conjunction with restoration. And then an element that was in all the concepts in different forms, which Liz will talk about, was a half court or small basketball court with a pickleball court. And we did find that ended up being a priority improvement for the project. And then overall, back to the theme, participants expressed wanting to find a balance between preserving natural character of the site, natural features, habitat, while also improving the site for neighborhood passive recreation use and the introduction of active elements that particularly cater to families, children, playgrounds, basketball court. Well, actually, basketball court, football court that caters to all ages. So introduction of active elements while respecting the natural quality and character of the site. And this is a lead in to one more process step. I'll transition to Tony, and that is where we presented the preferred concept to the SWAN Neighbor Association. And Tony will provide a quick summary of that.
Sorry about that. I did attend the Southwest Association of Neighbors, or SWAN, on May 3rd, presented the draft park master plan, and went over the planning process for that group, which also included some neighbors from Bailey Ridge that attended. And there was a Q&A during that process. And there were concerns, as we have noted throughout our public engagement, on the erosion and the drainage flow of water across the park, and the erosion, of course, at Chambers Swale. And that's kind of been a concern across the board, of course, and a concern for us, as well as the potential for some noise from the basketball pickleball court. And that primarily came from the neighbors directly across from the proposed location located in the plan. And so those were kind of that was a general focus from the neighbors as far as input at the Neighborhood Association. The Neighborhood Association did endorse the plan, but they did ask that we were to be sure to inform the neighbors of this meeting and the council meeting coming up, and the public process, which was done. And I did send out an email through our MailChimp listserv that we use, and also using Nextdoor to alert the neighbors of this process forthcoming. And then, of course, had it on the Bailey Ridge Park webpage. So I do want to note that request was met in that manner, same manner that we've alerted them to all of our other public processes. And I will turn that back over to, I think it's Liz or Colin.
Yeah. Thanks, Tony. So I'm going to go over the concept plans we created and then the draft master plan. And just to reiterate the process a little bit. So we did a study of the existing conditions, and then we analyzed the site. for opportunities and constraints. And then we held our first open house and online survey. And it was after that, we took the feedback that we heard from the survey and the first meeting with the public, and we created three concepts, three different options for what Bailey Ridge Park could look like. And I think Colin mentioned that there are kind of a set of similar elements that you'll see in the first three concepts, and they're arranged slightly differently. So we were wanting the public's input on their preference for different elements as well as how they're arranged on the site. And some of those elements you'll see throughout the different concepts are accessible paths, and we've shown a selection of crushed rock paths, concrete, and bark mulch. There are also benches to sit around the park and observe nature, which the neighborhood commented they really, really enjoyed that aspect of the park. We've also included picnic shelters near the Douglas Fir Forest and the playground in this first concept. And in all three concepts, we're proposing that we remove invasive species along the swale and the wetland and restore some of that habitat and that vegetation that's not there currently. We also included swale crossings or crossings across Chambers Swale in every concept, and you'll see that the placement of them is different in each one. The concept one crossing is at the furthest north property line on the site. We've also included a boardwalk over the wetland that you can see kind of more centrally located in the middle of the wetland. Every concept has street trees. And we're also proposing that we manage the Douglas Fir Forest to improve the tree health, but also add light and visibility to that part of the park. And then every concept would have accessible park entrances and signage as well. And for each concept, I'll talk about what is unique to that concept too. And in concept one, the major unique element is we're showing a traditional playground. So this would be a playground that you see like more historically, like a play structure. And let's see, and we've located that one really close to Tayside Street for accessibility and just really ease of access. And in concept two, you'll see really similar elements, like I mentioned, but just different configurations. We're still showing paths with all of those three different material types, benches. There's a picnic shelter that's situated in this concept near the playground in the forest, the Douglas Fir Forest. We're still proposing to remove invasive species in this concept, as well as habitat restoration. The crossing in this concept is a little bit further south across Chambers Swale, and it's situated a little bit more in between some of those really prominent oak trees that Colin mentioned. Some unique aspects to concept two were the nature play amenity that the public was interested in, as well as we introduced a three-point basketball court that's really close to the nature play, some surrounding trees and lawn as well. And then our third concept had paths, seating, the restoration that I previously mentioned. The crossing in concept three across Chambers Swale is located more centrally in the park in concept three. And then some unique features about concept three, we included both traditional and nature play areas for this concept. And we also did a variation on the sports court. We did a half basketball court, which is also a size that can accommodate pickleball. So we include that combination. And then in terms of crossings for the wetlands, we included a crossing with crushed rock and also a boardwalk, a really short boardwalk. And I'll talk about, so our first three concepts, we showed the public those three concepts in the second online survey and the second open house. And we presented those concepts, and then we used the feedback that we received from the online survey to determine which concept was their most preferred. And like Colin mentioned, over half of the participants preferred concept three. So we use concept three as the basis for the draft master plan. Things that we noticed the public preferred were they preferred more direct paths to the playground, the creek crossing, and the sports court. So we've readjusted those pathways to align with their preference. They also preferred wetland circulation that was kind of like an upside down U shape and included multiple crossing points, including that crossing kind of closer to the street. They preferred crushed rock in that area on the western side of the site. So we've shown that, and that connects to the crossing across Chambers Swale, which participants preferred the more centrally located crossing location. So we transferred that into the draft master plan. And the combination of both traditional and nature play were also the most popular or most preferred. So we kept those areas as well as the half basketball and pickleball court option, which were in concept three and were most preferred. So we kept those as well. So the draft master plan overall looks very similar to concept three because that was the most preferred option that we had. And now we can open it up, I think, for questions and discussion, unless Tony or Colin, you have anything to add?
Just that we're open for questions from the board and ask that we're asking the board to endorse the plan and then forward a recommendation to City Council to approve the plan as a motion. Maybe we could move out of the presentation for questions.
Actually, Tony.
We might have some questions based on the actual images.
So yeah, I was just going to see if we could pop back to concept two. If that's all right. Thank you.
Keith, why don't you take it away?
I don't know that any particular question. I was just kind of curious at comparing the two and three with the final again.
Elizabeth, could you just highlight quickly what were the main differences of two and three?
Yeah, of course. So in concept two, they really focused on the play area was only nature play. So there wouldn't be any traditional play structures that you see at most common parks. The crossing across Chambers Swale is at the very far north. Let me zoom in and I'll highlight some of these. So the crossing across the creek is further north in concept two. Like I mentioned, the nature play is the only play option in concept two. The sport court area is just a three-point basketball court. And then you have just one crossing over the wetland. Those are the main differences. Aside from, like, you'll notice the paths are slightly different alignments, but that's a little bit more subtle. So concept three, we have a centrally located crossing over Chambers Swale. So it's a little bit closer to like some of these amenities further down, like the play areas. In terms of playgrounds, you have two options. We've included nature play and traditional play. In the wetland on the western side of the site, you have two separate crossings. So you have one on the very western property edge that's crushed rock, and then you have a very small boardwalk close to Tayside Street that lets you get kind of uphill, like up and over the wet area. And then the sports court in concept three is a little bit larger. And so it's a half basketball court, and that size also allows pickleball. So we have a pickleball court shown there as well. I think all of the other features are similar. They're just in different kind of locations or different alignments.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So one of the questions I have, and one of the things I see there is those concepts all have picnic tables labeled. And I was curious, it doesn't look like the picnic tables are specifically in the draft master plan. Was there specific opposition to that? Or I know in the past also we've asked about things like benches and water fountains, and generally been told that those get added in later and aren't necessarily part of the master process. So maybe that's also the case here for the picnic tables in terms of the draft master plan, but just one of the, I noticed that's been dropped in the kind of the final iteration here.
That would be correct, Keith. We don't typically show site furnishings in the final draft master plan.
That's what I thought I remembered from previous things, but just wanted to.
Just when we get to the design point, that's when we really, you know, decide where they're going to go in.
Right.
That's accurate. There's no intent to omit picnic tables. And I know that as we're working on the cost estimate that accompanies the master plan, that does include the full collection of site furnishings that are typical in a neighborhood park, which would include picnic tables and benches and two drinking fountains. So they're not shown at this level, but yes, they are intended to be accompany the neighborhood park.
Great. Thank you, Colin. That was one of the questions I had. And then the other thing I noticed is just the difference in the number of boardwalk crossings over the wetland or the swale, and the differences in the type of material on the pathways. And Colin, you just mentioned kind of the cost estimates. Is there any thought around that in terms of kind of the selections that were done for those materials and in terms of the number of crossings with regards to how much each concept would cost?
Yeah, absolutely. We're very conscious of the cost of the elements that add up to this this concept, and you highlighted some features, particularly boardwalks, that are more expensive than other path materials, and crushed rock probably engineered wood fiber is the least expensive, and then crushed rock, asphalt concrete, and then up to a boardwalk, and then, you know, we have a bridge crossing too. That's probably at the higher end of the spectrum. But yeah, this concept, and again, this is a master plan. This is a wetland area, and you know, it's going to be likely jurisdictional or regulated by the state. And if we place more than 50 cubic yards in it, then that'll trigger a permitting process. So we think at least our recommendation would be to explore crushed rock on the west side, where there's less water and more upland, as long as it doesn't disturb the wetland and habitat too significantly. And then where the wetland is more inundated and we more need a more durable crossing, we're proposing a limited section of boardwalk. But again, this is a master plan. It's designed to establish funding parameters for the project. And as they get into the design next phase, it's typical for us to look at material substitution or material change to bring down cost. So, but I can tell you that, yeah, that was cost is a consideration in the selection of materials we've used.
Great, thanks, Colin. And you just answered my next question in terms of the wetland and whether or not that was going to run into permitting issues with the state. So thank you.
We think so. I mean, unless we avoid it entirely, and it's hard to avoid it entirely because it bisects the site. But we do think that there's opportunity for restoration and enhancement, and that some minimal impacts could be combined with enhancement, particularly along the chamber swale, and we could end up with a very strong restoration project that is allowed to impact some minimal wetland features in return for delivering on that restoration. So we think there's opportunity for on-site mitigation is what I'm trying to say.
Is there year-round standing water there?
Tony,
it's an intermittent stream.
Intermittent stream, Tony, is that what you said?
It is.
Okay.
Al, I think you had your hand up.
I think the question or interest concern was addressed, but I'll repeat it just because I'm not sure if you want to elaborate. It looks on my assessment that about 20-25% of the canopy of the Douglas fir forest would be removed in the opening up as is described. And that's probably a good idea. I'm not gonna have problems with that, but I'm interested in the Scotch pine woodland at the other end. That sounds like it was an ornamental tree that was planted and went wild. I don't think Scotch pine's native. So I'm wondering what's the percentage of cut expected in that area of woodland and what species would be replaced so that our tree canopy is not diminished. There you go.
I'll address. I think you're generally accurate about the Doug fir forest. We are proposing 25-30% thinning to open up access and open up views and improve the overall health. It's very, very dense and very dark, and there's no understory when you get in there. The Scotch pine, I think your general characterization is accurate. It's struggling. They are used to more of an upland habitat and not a wet habitat, not having the roots wet almost year round. And so we don't think any of that is going to survive and are planning for the eventual replacement. Doesn't mean we have to take all the trees out now, but you know that Salem has been taking out trees, City of Salem, that are declining or dead or not in good health. And we expect that that to continue and that area like needing to be replaced. We haven't really got into species selection, tree species, because this is a master plan. I'll ask Liz, have we done any like rough plant palettes? I'm just not sure if we've gotten to that point yet where we're addressing plant selection. So I'll ask Liz to provide a little bit of help with that.
Yeah, we didn't pick out plant species and identify specific locations. So we don't have like a planting plan information, but in the concepts we are showing, like adding, or one recommendation kind of high level is adding more oak trees, since there are a few like really mature oak trees near the chamber swale. So that was one thing that we are proposing like the city could expand upon, but at the same time that may not be appropriate in the wetland area specifically.
I can add to that I've spoken to Mylan about this site, so at some point in the near future we'll have an assessment done whether that's internal or through a contractor. We'll have an assessment of all the trees at the park. The Scots pines are suffering, as Colin said. A lot of them are dying, and they've been removed, and probably the majority will be removed, and there will be replanting. And we'll rely on Myland and other professionals to provide us with the, you know, the appropriate species. Also want to note, as it says in the staff report, that we are in the midst of, we have another consultant working on a holistic assessment of the site regarding the erosion that's taking place and the drainage runoff, and looking at that. So we're waiting on the results of that and recommendations on moving forward ahead of any park development, so we can address those issues first, the drainage and the erosion, and then that restoration that follows that.
Is it present in our guiding principles that the species replacing these will be favored to be indigenous species found native to Oregon?
They should be native plants, whatever can tolerate the condition at the time.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting to. There are plants that could tolerate the conditions that are not native. And I'm wondering if we have guidelines that are reinforce that principle, that we're not trying to propagate diversity, we're trying to preserve nature in our parks.
We'll look to native first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that, where is that written?
I don't think it's written. That's just typical that we would look to our native species first.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there a list like with street trees where there's an index, and I know that's updated frequently, is there a list like that of trees selected for parks as well, or is that only for street trees that you have that long index?
Just the street trees at this time that I'm aware of, unless Mylan is here, unless he can add to that. But
yeah, I'm here. I can tell you that we have street trees that we want to continue to update the list of trees that tolerate, you know, urban conditions and habitats near the streets where they're going to get a lot of pollution and not be in good soils and those types of things. And we could definitely in the future come up with recommendations for parks, whether it be for naturalized areas. We're going to treat a park like Riverfront Park a lot different than we're going to treat a park like Minto Brown. So, you know, if we're gonna have natural areas and areas that we want to promote, you know, more natural wildlife habitat, and have groupings of oaks or native trees, I would say we could come up with different recommendations for trees, and we do that, like Tony said already, the best that we can. We know trees will do well. A lot of the times, it depends very specifically on soil types and. And you just can't replicate nature in a park and think that a tree is going to do well, that does well in a forest, and just plant that, you know, and it's going to grow. It's not. So we plant trees that are going to do well and do our best to put native trees in when we can.
Al, I think two things I would add to that from what Mylan shared in the past that might be of interest. One is, Mylan, at one point in a meeting, you made a point that when we look at where we purchase native trees has a difference. So if we're going to purchase a certain type of tree, trying to buy it from Northern California versus Washington, where it's kind of grown with that, the temperature of, you know, 1 or 2 degrees warmer to account for the future climate, but then it's still a tree that's native to this area. I think you mentioned that within the last year, and that really stood out to me. So Al, wanted to pass that along as kind of a city strategy that I know Mylan's employing. And then another thing that stood out to me in the last year on this point that you have is with the Bush Park cultural landscape plan, there was some talk about the future of the area and kind of how climate conditions will change and planning for that and kind of the ecosystem change. So I know that city staff are looking at that, but I agree with you that there could be some interesting things to put that into our goals. And especially as we think about the climate action plan for the city, building that into our native planting and making that part of the goals, but also trying to match that with where we think the climate will go in this area.
My thinking. Thank you.
Yeah, all good points, Alan. And we do some like ponderosa pine. We plant a valley pine, ponderosa pine that does well in the valley. So yeah, and we're trying to implement more native species into our street trees and more native species into our parks that we know will do well. So we're trying to implement more native species all the time.
I don't want to be critical of this, but I want the point made that this is something that we're doing, and it's kind of like we accept this as natural and this is the way it should be. But if Mylan goes somewhere and we lose them and lose this knowledge and motivation, where is it written that it will be continued in the same vein with the same kind of emphasis? That's what I want us to keep in mind down the road when the opportunity presents. Thank you.
Thank you.
Al, that's a really good point. I think we should keep that going, keep this conversation going, and think about where that could be integrated. And Mylan, maybe at a next meeting or in a future one, you could kind of let us know a little bit more of how that's written down currently. And you know, as you came into this role, I know you came into this role right at the start of COVID, but thinking about what, and then there was the ice storm, there's been a lot of things on your plate, but kind of what guidance was given to you versus what guidance have you adopted yourself, and where could we as a board kind of help direct some of that in terms of recommendations for city code and whatnot.
If I may, Dylan and Al, I think one of the opportunities where Al, that concept may be able to be codified a bit, for lack of a better word, is in the master planning process. When that is due up, I think in the next, what is it, Tony, year and a half, when that's kind of maybe going to kick off, depending a little bit on where the R Salem planning ends up. But sometime in the next couple of years, I know that the city is planning on rehashing that. That's what I'm flipping through the master plan policies now to see if there's any indication that sort of preference for native when deemed viable is in there. And I don't see that it is, but I think that's kind of where it would be appropriate to have that general guideline written down for our parks anyway.
Yes. I look forward to it. Thank you.
Woody, I saw your hand was up. And I know you have a lot of familiarity with code as well.
Well, you know, and when you consider put trees in parks, you want to consider soil type, soil structure, drainage, and available moisture. But you want to look at, if you can, to plant larger trees in parks, because they really are. We shouldn't be putting large trees on the street because of utilities and wires and all the other stuff. So we should be thinking about bigger trees in our parks. But my other comment was asking about, are there any topographical changes where I'm assuming where those oak trees are there in that northern end?
The topography from the north slopes about 30 or more feet from the northwest to the southeast.
Yeah, I was just asking if there are any proposed changes in the topography.
Yeah, I can address that. And again, this is master plan level. We've not gotten to grading design. Tony mentions that the topography does slope about 30 feet from one side or the other. That slope is relatively uniform, but our approach would be to design around the critical root zones of those oak trees, given our best attempt to preserve them. And so yeah, this is one of the, I think, advantages of this concept, is that the crossing is in the middle, it's further away. We still are promoting channel restoration, creek restoration, that would likely involve some splaying, opening the banks so they're not so in size, and bank stabilization. But we very much want to preserve those oak trees, and that will be part of our recommendation in the master plan, is to take steps during the design process to preserve those significant trees.
Okay, thank you.
A follow-up question on that. Tony or Rob, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought oftentimes grading adjustments were included in master plans. I remember a conversation around that with Battle Creek in particular. And I guess the reason I ask is it seems like that would have a pretty substantial impact on the cost of the project. And so as we're thinking about making sure areas are flat for ball courts and things like that. So I guess, has that level of detail been included to make sure that sites are suitable with current grading for the amenities that are listed?
Grading is included in it's a higher level plan, but yeah, generally grading is, you know, it's a proposed cost estimate, of course, but yes, that is taken into consideration.
So yeah, what I was referencing is that we've not developed a detailed grading plan that would typically accompany a set of construction documents, but we have run area calculations for all of this and have a pretty good handle on soil movement, cut and fill, quantities, removal needed to construct each feature, and all of that grading work is included in the cost estimate.
Understood, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Woody.
I just have one other comment about the pine trees, the Scots pine and two needle pines. There's a lot of them there around, they're dying and they're being infested with a clearwing moth. Usually you can see an indicator of that is you'll see patches of pitch on the outside where they've bored into the trees. So they're slowly being removed throughout the park system that I've seen. So, and it's eventually they're not as.
Yeah, many of those trees are just sitting in water and falling over as well.
One question I had, especially while we're talking about plants, was letter H is the plant bed. And I was just curious, and apologies if you already listed this, but what is the plan for that in terms of plant bed and what type of plants are you thinking? Generally speaking.
Liz, do you want to take that one and you know, just describe what we mean by plant bed?
Yeah, so plant bed would include like smaller shrubs, like shrubs on the like lower height level, and then also some ground cover. And usually we put like bark mulch around there to just keep any moisture so that minimizes the amount of watering that you do. But at this stage, I don't have any specific plant species names to share, but that's kind of generally like the forms that you would see, if that helps.
That does. Yes. Sorry. That's exactly what I was looking for. Just more of like, what was the plan in terms of shrubs? And that's helpful. Thank you.
Okay, cool. Good.
Other questions from board members?
I'll go ahead and make a motion if it's good to go.
I think so. I would just quickly just want to say, you know, Colin and Liz and Tony, thank you all for answering all these questions. I know we've had a lot of detailed ones tonight, but appreciate all the great answers you provided.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now go ahead and move that we recommend that the City Council approve the Bailey Ridge Park Draft Master Plan.
All right, we have a second. Let's quickly go through a roll call. Well, any further discussion on the master plan before we move to a vote? Hearing none, let's go through a roll call. Alan Alexander's absent, sorry. Woody Dukes?
Aye.
Dave Friedenmaker?
Aye.
Rick Hartwig?
Aye.
Al Holland?
Aye.
Joan Lloyd?
Aye.
Keith Norris?
Aye.
And I vote aye as well. So the master plan is approved by SRAB and forwarded to council.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all so much. Really appreciate this and look forward to seeing it move forward. All right, well, let's move on into our agenda items. The next one we have up is this communication from board to city council. I prefaced most of this last time, so I will just quickly give a refresher on it. But essentially, my hope with this was to write a letter, really trying to elevate some of the work that we're doing at SPRAP. I think that oftentimes, you know, we have a lot of good ideas, and there's times where we can sometimes council has conversations, and we have conversations, and it'd be good to try and link those up as much as possible. I put my ideas into 5 different recommendations specifically, and I guess just high level, I should say that the hope here tonight is to share with you all this letter. We can make adjustments, we can decide not to send it, but I'll just give this short overview of kind of why what I was thinking. It really came back though to Salem Revised Code section 13.055. And that there's a requirement that at least once per year council shall meet in joint sessions with the board to review existing and changing policies, review board bylaws, and tour facilities and programs. So far, it's been a little bit more ad hoc in terms of council engagement. And I think that there's a few ways that we could try and formalize this that would be beneficial for everyone. So just to quickly run through the 5 recommendations. The first being an annual agenda item for SPRAP to present to council. Right now, as I mentioned, this is me signing up for public comment in my role as chair. I think that having it as an agenda item, even though it won't take a ton of time, will just help formalize it. It'll provide opportunity for more comment and thought from council, provide an opportunity for us to go in more prepared as well and bring ideas back to SPRAP to talk about for the year ahead. The second one is when there's work sessions and council related to parks, trees, or issues with our portfolio that one of us is able to attend, likely the chair or vice chair, but I think we could open that up. And that would be an opportunity just once again for us to help relay some of the conversations that we have had in SPRAB, but then also to be there to bring some of that back for future conversation. Number 3 was inviting a member of council to serve as the liaison to SPRAB. Rick, I believe this was your idea last time. I thought that was a really great suggestion. So I think inviting them to attend at least quarterly, which is, I settled on quarterly, at least for the recommendation here, based on what we found to work with the city manager's office. We can take that out, we can adjust that and add a different recommendation, but that was what I started with. Number 4, going back to the park usage and planning subcommittee we had previously, really to digging into an issue and presenting recommendations that council could then adopt and take to staff and work with staff on implementation. I think there's more opportunities for council to direct some projects our way. And so I'd like to see that replicated in the future if possible. And then number 5, I'm really thinking kind of like we're talking now with native trees. We have the climate action plan that has been adopted and there's an active council subcommittee looking at the climate action plan. And I think the more that SPRAB can be part of that would be great. For those that don't know, I participated as the SPRAB representative on the climate action plan process. So I'm familiar with the recommendations, but if you've looked through the document, there are quite a few recommendations, hundreds, that have then been, you know, brought down by layered and prioritized. And so I think as we can kind of be part of that process to keep the natural resource prioritization up, thinking about things like planting native trees, thinking about tree canopy, soil restoration, you know, thinking about vegetation in the parks, there's a lot we could be doing there. And so having us involved would be good. So those are my recommendations. I think, you know, if we decide to move this forward, we can send this to council and I would attend the next council meeting or whenever this goes forward to council to share some of this verbally and see where we go from there. But with that, I would love to get any feedback or thoughts people have.
Dylan, I think it's a good letter, and I think it's a good correspondence in terms of emphasizing our desire as a board to be more engaged with the council and fulfilling our role. In particular, I like number 1 and number 4. I think the fact that we have to participate in council discussions as and other city comment periods as a other member of the public is undercuts the whole idea of advisory boards to the city council. And so I think that one is a good recommendation. Number 4, like you said, the developing specific recommendations on areas where council has identified that they need a deeper look and assistance on policies related to parks makes a lot of sense. So I like the letter. I like all 5 recommendations and happy to support it going forward.
Thank you, Keith. Appreciate that. Al, did you have a comment?
I find this very interesting and in a little ways perplexing. I agree with it wholeheartedly. I think it's a slam dunk natural, a good thing to do. Promoting communication and cooperation between city and its tentacles, its arms, I think is good. But I'm a newbie here and I don't want to overstep. So I don't know how to handle this exactly, but what I see is this being something that I can identify with good. And yet I remember in a statement or a position that was done early on this year relevant to a change in planning process such that this parks board was going to be, and it might be an adopting property, I don't remember it was, to be a park or altering something. It was somehow that we had been involved in projects in the past, and I got the sense that the revision that was being proposed in some policies change for the city council had to do with expediting and the process in such a way that a public ability to thwart development and siting of housing was going to be mitigated early on in the process rather than protracted at numerous places. So I saw that as a way to reduce public objection to development. That went through without a whole lot of objection, I thought here, to my surprise. But what you're proposing is somewhat different to that. And I think that that's good.
You're absolutely right. The other case is, I think part of what I would like to see here is more, I think more communication could have helped some of those, that case and that you're talking about there in terms of where that was a situation specifically where we were basically trying to review a permit that was already approved and trees had been removed and trying to say, should this permit have been approved even though the trees were already gone? And I think this kind of, the way I see it, and this is just my own view, is that there, like you're saying, there's tentacles, I think is a good word. And sometimes there's not always, there's confusion about who's talking to whom. And I think I do want to give staff credit that staff does a really good job of making sure all the pieces are moving in the same direction. But I think sometimes we have situations where council might feel that, you know, this process didn't work well. And then, so they're trying to change something and we say something didn't work well. And a lot of times those conversations aren't happening together. And so I think the more we can have a conversation directly with council and in that case, for example, if we were to have someone come join our meeting and talk about, well, this was a process that didn't work as well, let's talk through that. It's a good opportunity for us as an advisory board to share that feedback and for council and their decision-making abilities to be taking that into account versus just through, you know, conversations we might have one-off with our counselors or through the occasional letter. But I agree with you on that case too. I think that's something where just in general, the more we as an advisory board can be part of these processes. And I think the first step is making sure that we're, you know, on the agenda and that they're coming here as well.
Thank you.
And Al, I guess in reference to that previous case regarding trees, I don't know that I saw it so much as removing the ability of the public or of SPRAB to influence the process, but was more clarifying where our influence would be most beneficial and not overly disruptive post decisions, right? So like Dylan said, we were reviewing a decision that had already been made and kind of retroactively.
I see.
And the waters were getting very muddy in the city ordinances and code as a result. So I think that was a thing that was clarifying that our engagement and opportunity for engagement would be more on the front end of that process than on the
sure
back end of it. But yes, it removed part of our step in that process.
That's probably a good clarification. Probably a good clarification in that sense.
Yeah.
Kind of like taking away the ability to call back an election once it's already settled.
Yes, kind of.
I can live with that.
So, but you're right. It was changing the engagement process, but I think in a way that helped clarify where our engagement in the city's land use planning processes, we could be more impactful.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to drag it out. That's fine. Thank you.
No, I think it's a fair question. And my hope is, and if I remember correctly, that some of those processes will come back now with the recommendations. I believe Dr. Robert Chandler was leading that. I think, you know, one of the recommendations I had suggested there was that SPRAB has like a specific role in that process, and kind of like how neighborhood associations get more time often for public comment. And so if SPRAB has more time to respond to that, if we're not going to be on the back end of the process, which as Keith said, probably makes sense to be not adjusting or to reacting to a decision that's been made, but to make sure that there is ample time to have it at the front end. And so once again, we're not just put into public comment to where we're not actually able to provide expertise or advisory capacity.
Right. And so that's where I actually think this letter and some of the recommendations of this letter help point it in that direction, right? Of making sure that council is engaging us in those areas of development where our kind of jurisdiction lies.
Any other feedback? Any typos that I may have missed? Anything along those lines?
I guess, Dylan, my only other comment, more to the board, is this is great, and I think this is good, but also, it's something that we as a board are going to have to make sure that we hold up our end of the bargain on, right? If we ask to be involved on things, we got to be ready to be involved on things and to fulfill our role in that, which I think we're capable of doing. But that's in some ways we're asking for more work, which I think is good and doable. But just making sure that's clear.
Very good clarification. Well, if folks feel comfortable with the letter and with you know, the reality that this may mean more work on occasional projects or things that come up, I would welcome a motion to approve or to, I guess, adopt and submit the letter to council.
So moved.
Okay. Seconded. Any further comment? Hearing none, let's go through a quick roll call vote. Keith Norris.
Aye.
Alan Alexander is absent. Sorry. Woody Dukes.
Aye.
Dave Friedenmaker.
Aye.
Rick Hartwig.
Aye.
Al Holland.
Aye.
Joan Lloyd.
Aye.
And I vote aye as well. All right. Well, this has been approved and will be moved on to council. Tony, I see you came on screen. Did you have a comment about next steps?
No, I just came on to see if you had a question about moving it forward. So we'll take it through the usual process with your signature and go through that way.
That sounds great. And I think it would be good for me to attend the council meeting that in terms of public comment when this does come forward, just so I can provide some verbal comments. So I think if you could just stay in touch with me about when that might go forward in the next few weeks, I can plan accordingly.
I will do that.
Thank you. All right, well, let's go into our board member updates. Is there anything folks would like to share?
I think last time I had shared that the public library strategic planning process was scheduling dates. Those dates have been scheduled. And so that my engagement in that process is gonna kick off at the end of this month. We've got a virtual meeting on June 29th and then a strategic clarity retreat on July 6th, that will actually be an in-person meeting, and then a number of sessions scheduled through about middle of September. So that process is getting well underway.
Thank you, Keith. Any other board member updates? And I'll just say that, you know, this can be committees or master plans you're on. I also know Rick and Al, you've both been touring a lot of parks, so I think this is also an appropriate place if there's something that, you know, you wanted to share that you saw at a park or that you feel relevant to the board that you want to share. I'm always open to hear some of those as well.
Well,
yeah, Joan.
Well, I'm sitting here seething right now because, I mean, I was listening to what was going on, but thinking about what other parks have or might possibly gain. And we have, I can't remember now, Eagles View Park, that is only 3.5 acres and might have a shelter or some kind of structure. We have only 2 parks in Northeast Neighbors neighborhood, and neither one of them has a shelter or community gardens I see here. They're older parks. How can we get these things? I mean, a shelter costs a lot of money, and I don't know that SPIF would do that, maybe in 2 or 3 applications. I don't know. So that's my comment. I'm sorry.
That's helpful, Joan. And I mean, I think that that's exactly, you know, as we all come from a lot of different parts of the city, it's helpful to be pointing out where there might be a need for more amenities. You were not able to join us last meeting. Is that correct, on the CIP presentation?
Right. I'm sorry.
I just want to make sure I have the right meetings. I know Tony sent out the CIP presentation from Tammy Stars, and there's some really good information in there in terms of submitting project ideas and thinking about how projects can be built in. They usually do attach to a master plan process. So I this might be a case of Rob or Tony kind of matching up the master plans that relate to the parks that Joan's talking about to see if there are structures that are built into those that could be then added to a CIP recommendation. But Rob, I see you're on, if you have any further input to add.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just add that, you know, one of the challenges the city has is funding. And so we have a funding stream for called system development charges. And they're to develop parks to serve new development in the city. So when we're talking about our older parks in more of the center part, it's a bigger challenge because those are not typically the intent for that funding stream. So it's just a matter of funding. If we have that, we can get it done. So something like the bond that's being discussed is a great opportunity. And that's why the projects in the bond package are largely focused on some of our older parks and making improvements to them.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if things can't be changed. That's all.
It's all about the funding stream. So the park system right. Development charges are they're a mechanism the city has. That's there are requirements for how the city uses those funds. It's part of state statute. And so I think the city gets creative as much as we can. But I think there's some certain limits to that.
Okay, thank you.
What I hear, and I want to emphasize this before we let it go, that we've got a section of town that's underserved in the parks, and partly in growing food, community gardens.
Exactly, that's another thing, yes.
And we've got a need that's pretty apparent here. And yet we don't have a developed funding stream to address that. The place that we go to get resources to develop a community garden and some of the standard amenities in our parks of today that are not in some of the older ones, doesn't exist. I think what the lady is talking about is there's this case, but the case is a result of a lack of planning, a lack of initiative, a lack of provision for maintenance and operation and upkeep of the existing parks we've got. If we don't have a mechanism for doing that, we're digging a grave. We're eroding our infrastructure. And if we don't have a funding stream, I think then we're being called upon to be creative and think about how can we create a funding stream, or how do we divert funds? What is this not a priority that should be addressed? That's all I'm saying. I don't know I have any answers, but I think we need to think about it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joan.
Joan, can I ask somebody on 30 which 2 parks you're referring to?
Oh, what parks am I referring to?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, specifically in Northeast Neighbors Neighborhood Association, I haven't checked all the you know, neighborhood parks,
right.
But it's Englewood Park and McRae.
Rob, could you just elaborate a little bit and feel free to say that, you know, if you need to follow up more information, but you said that the current requirements for spendings with SDCs make it hard to use for the older parks. And could you just clarify why that is for those parks in particular?
Yeah, so the SDCs, the city has an SDC methodology. So it's a report that's available on the city's website, and it was developed by a committee. And it outlines essentially where the focus is for the SDC funding. And it's compliant with state statute. And that essentially it is we can use SDCs to fund parks that serve the whole city, because new development, that those folks who live in new development, they need to be served by, for say, Riverfront Park. And it could also, it's also very helpful for developing new neighborhood parks in the kind of the edges of town. For example, Bailey Ridge Park, we just discussed earlier tonight. What it's not really, it is not intended to be a funding mechanism for reinvesting in areas of the city that are fully developed. That's not its intent. It's not the purpose of the funding stream.
Thank you for clarifying that. I think Al does make a good point. I think that just always thinking about our funding opportunities is good. And I know I had a lot of questions. I mean, I haven't had a chance to review the PowerPoint more closely, but this is probably something just to keep coming back to, I guess, as we think about city funding in general, is how can we as Parks board members be advocating for more stable funding? And then I guess, you know, opening that up, Rob and Tony, and for all of you, is where do you see gaps like this that exist? If you have older parks that maybe don't have a funding stream, you know, are there other areas that you see that just don't have those funding mechanisms available as easily as some of the newer parks? But Joan, yeah.
I don't know what the latest census said, but in the earlier census, 2010, that McRae is in a zero opportunity area. I don't know about Englewood Park, but we're getting back to equity and here, you know, all these new neighborhoods and, you know, all these wonderful things. And it would just be really nice.
So a couple of thoughts on that, Joan, and I think you're right, with something the city needs to be cognizant of. A couple of qualifications around that, though, as you mentioned Eagle View. Well, that is, you're right, in the master planning process, it has all of those things.
Right.
Eagle View doesn't have anything in it. It's got two picnic tables and a mulch trail around it, right? So that isn't something that the city has funded or put into those facilities. The other thing, looking through the comprehensive park system planning document, it looks like, at least based on, I think, when was this done? 2013. So it's dated, but it has, for those two parks, it does indicate that it has all of the standard amenities required of a neighborhood park. So you're right, it doesn't have the shelter, but that's not on the list of standard options. And so I guess from the city's policy perspective, they are meeting kind of that minimum threshold of neighborhood parks. And so just a couple of thoughts there. And now that goes back to the master park planning thing. That's something that we could look at, right, in terms of when that process gets underway. How are we defining the various parks and what sort of standard amenities are we thinking about, or across the equity lines, what are we thinking about there? So,
Well, thank you. And they're very nice parks. They are wonderful parks and heavily used.
So. And I guess one of the questions I have, and sorry if I missed this as I was flipping around the pages, but in terms of the master planning, right, I believe the standard kind of lifetime for those is 20 years. But we did recently do a couple of master plans that were updates for older parks. Are these two parks that are due for master plans in the near future, so they can get those sort of things thought about in their future?
I don't know.
I think Rob probably has that spreadsheet. Yeah. Yes.
So both of the parks are neighborhood parks, right. And they are considered developed. We could do a master plan update for them, but both that as a project and also any improvements needs to be funded. So, so unlike some of the recent ones like Woodmansea Park, where that's a community park, it serves a larger three mile service area. We can use SDC funds to make improvements there. We just don't have the same opportunities for these older neighborhood parks.
I gotcha. And I think that's the one I was thinking of was Woodmansea, was one that I knew we had updated. But since these are developed, they don't need a master plan because the master plan that was developed has been completed on them, is the thought. Okay.
I would be careful to say that they don't need a master plan. I would just say there's no funding to do anything and okay. There's no funding to update the master plan.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Rob.
Yeah.
Some of the older parks, Keith, don't fall under our most recent, our comprehensive plans, the 99 plan or 2013 plan. But what we have done at McRae, for instance, Inglewood, Hoover, some of those, northeast parks, is we used the SPIF fund, the Salem Park Improvement Fund. And that actually came about as a means to utilize this very small pot of what we used to call deferred maintenance fund, but money that we use to upgrade our existing facilities. And we decided to build a matching grant program out of that because it was a way to get more funding and then match it to larger grants. And there's still opportunity to do that. The only problem with like a picnic shelter, for instance, which is an optional facility for a neighborhood park, you may have to update the plan. Now, what that means, Rob would look at that or make a decision, whoever takes Patricia's position as well, that, do we do a full-on master planning process or do we do a process to add a picnic shelter into a plan? So those are things that we could look at in the future. It may need a full master plan update, but there are those opportunities through the Salem Park Improvement Fund and finding donations to match and maybe matching a small local government grant to bring some funding in. There are some creative options to do that. And it starts with the neighborhood association. And Nan's been great in that respect, quite honestly. All of them.
I don't mean to sound ungrateful. We got a Salem Parks Improvement Fund grant to get both basketball courts resurfaced in Englewood and McRae and have lines painted on them. And we were very grateful because we got the entire amount. We only applied for one and we got two. So, no, we're very lucky. I just got jealous. That's all. I'm sorry.
You raise a good point, though, Joan. I mean, I think it's helpful for all of us to be thinking more about the funding streams and where they come from. So this has been a helpful discussion. And thank you, Rob and Tony, for helping clarify some of that, especially where it stands now and where the limitations exist in code. All right, well, let's move on into our information reports. First up, we have the Mission Street Parks Conservancy minutes. I don't think we have Christine here tonight. So did folks have any questions or comments on that we can follow up with her about? Okay, hearing none. Let's next go into our Parks and Natural Resource Planning update. Oh, sorry, next we're going to Urban Forestry update, but I think we're delaying a lot of that until next month. Is that correct, Mylan and Tony? No, Mylan, you were going to give us a more detailed update later this summer, correct?
I mean, I can give you guys an update the next report. I've been wanting to do a heritage tree program update with you guys. I just haven't had the time lately to put that together the way I want to. So if you guys want to ask any questions now about what we're doing currently, because I didn't give a report, I was out on leave. You guys can definitely ask questions, but like I said, I'm putting things together for you guys tonight. I apologize.
That's all right. We'll open it up. Any questions for Mylan?
Do we have notable trees of great size in Minto Brown Island Park or Riverfront Park or those parks?
Trees of, you mean like heritage trees that are designated heritage trees in those parks?
Basically, yeah.
Not that I'm aware of.
We do have some trees, you know, that are either on city property or state property that are heritage trees, but not on any of those parks you mentioned.
Okay.
Keith, you look like you're about to ask a question.
I felt like Al looked like he was about to follow up with something. So that's why I was hesitating. Okay. I was just, Mylon, I was curious, how'd your Arbor Day planting go with the junior high crew?
It went really well. You guys hear me?
No, you're cutting out on that one. We might need to switch to an email update on that one.
But I heard it went really well, which is good.
I heard that too, which is the core what we need. All right. Well, we can move on with that. But if folks have other questions for Miles, it looks like he dropped off. He might rejoin.
No, I'm here. I just turned my video off. I don't know if it was me breaking up or Keith.
We can hear you better now.
Okay. Yeah, the planting went great. Did it with two different planting two classes, and I think we got 25 trees in the ground. I had a great time, so yeah, went well.
Wonderful. Any other questions for Mylon? All right, well, thank you, Mylon. Appreciate it, and look forward to learning more about the heritage trees at a future meeting.
All right, Jess, thank you.
Let's go into our parks and natural resource planning update. Pretty full update here. I appreciate all the work, Rob, and I imagine Tony, that you put into this. We can open it up for questions. And just one I had right off the bat was with the climate action plan moving forward. I know we kind of had like a great in with Patricia being one of the lead staffers on that, and obviously having a pretty big passion for parks and wanting to bring parks and natural areas into the process. I'm curious, you know, Rob, are you helping take over some of the work that she was doing, or how are her duties being spread out, and does it still involve some parks folks?
I was involved in the climate action plan, but I no longer am, intimately anyways. Patricia is actually still on a very limited term helping the city.
Oh, okay.
Specifically with the climate action plan. So if you wanted to chime into one of the subcommittee meetings that are occurring right now, you might see her in the meeting, just so you know. So she's still there, and she's, I'm sure, still advocating for parks in her role there. I believe we will provide updates to SPRAB, you know, as there are things to update you on. I am following the process. And this month, there wouldn't seem to be too much that I thought would interest you all. They are, the committee is meeting. They are discussing prioritizing the short-term list of priorities. And they're having some good discussion. And I can definitely provide an update if that would be welcome in next month.
I'm always interested with how some of the prioritization is going, and specifically with the natural resource section. I know from that process, as you know, being there, you were there too. There's a lot, and so just anything pertinent on the, and I trust your judgment, and I can do a better job of tuning into those as well. But good to know she's still there, kind of advocating in our court there for parks and natural resources. I'll open it up to anyone else that have questions for Rob. All right.
Dylan, can I just add, there was some discussion earlier about a few things about R-Salem, about the update to the comprehensive park system plan that is approximately 2.5 years off, and also about native plants and trees. And so I thought in the chat, I'm going to drop a link to a document that has come out of the R-Salem process. The city's been doing outreach for years at this point, and we've gotten excellent feedback and tons of ideas from the community. And a lot of them are specific to parks and are packaged up in the document I'm going to share. And this is something that's going to be carried forward into that planning process that's about a year and a half away. And I just want to put your attention to the kind of the end of the document. There's a section on climate change and some policy ideas and specifically addressing native plants and trees. So I'll just drop that in the chat so you all can review that.
Thank you, Rob. Really appreciate that. Were there any other questions? I thought I saw someone go off mute. No? Okay. Well, let's move on with our updates. Parks operations update. And I don't believe we have Jen tonight, but as always, if there's questions, we can see if anyone on the staff knows the answer and follow up otherwise.
Just real quick, Rob, that was the link to this agenda for this meeting.
Good catch, Keith.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Correct link coming.
All right. This looks good. Thank you. Appreciate that. This is much more digestible than I expected. So this is nice. I thought this was going to be one of those 300-page documents. So I'm pleased that it's 7 pages.
I had the same thought of, oh, this looks nice.
And I know that it takes a lot of work to get things condensed like this. So kudos to you and whoever else worked on this. All right. Any questions on the Parks Operations update? Hearing none. All right, let's move to our recreation services update. Any questions or thoughts from the board? Hi, Becky. I see you came on. Did you have anything to add as well?
No, nothing really to add. Just wanted to see if there were any questions. So
I'll just note I was a little sad to see the fireworks decision was made to postpone.
I know.
But understand, I know there's a lot that goes into that.
Yeah, we were. That's always a tough decision because it's one of the most popular things that we do every year. So, but I just think in talking with staff, just budgetarily, obviously part of the reason that was coming up now was because we're getting ready to have the budget finalized for July 1 through next year. So, we needed to find out even what we were looking at for, you know, options for next year. And one of the things that I had forgotten about and was quickly reminded months ago was a lot of fireworks companies don't even bid or offer you a chance to do it unless you spend, you know, over $25,000 on fireworks. So, anyway, but it's a tough situation, but we're looking at 2023 and we'll, you know, we want to do it and do it well. That's the other thing. So just not enough time to really get it adequately prepared and budgetarily and everything else. So, yeah.
That makes sense. My only other question was, I saw the photos, which I appreciate about the using the Jerry Frank Amphitheater for the first time. And, you know, were there any lessons learned or, you know, how did that go in terms of a logistics and staff perspective? Do you feel like it was pretty flawless? And are there things that, you know, you feel like the city needs to work on or that you all are trying to figure out how to do better next time with the whole new facility? I imagine there's a lot of learning.
There is a lot of learning. And, you know, I mean, that particular event, as I look outside and it's raining now, we've had an extraordinarily large amount of rain this spring. And that particular event, I was down there and it happened to be, it was the 29th, I think it was, anyways, raining off and on, but the wind, they had wind gusts of up to 30 miles an hour. And so one of the things that we're working with right now with park staff, for instance, in the new facility is like the irrigation lines, for instance. In the rest of the park, they're down, you know, 12 to 18 inches. And in the new area, because of it being, you know, they brought in fill and built the park on top there. So there, those irrigation lines are only down, you know, in some cases, 8 to 12 inches. Needless to say, we did have a tent canopy stake that got put in and hit one of the lines. But, you know, so those are all those things, just trying to navigate that and working with park staff right now to come up with a different type of cover for the electrical boxes because they're about 50 pounds each, need a specific crescent wrench, you know. So just little things like that. But I think the event, they were very pleased with the new facility. And, you know, I mean, all they said to me was, Becky, why did you do this to us with the wind? And I thought, I really wish I had the opportunity to, you know, control that. But anyway, but no, I think they had, well, they had up to 800 people registered. I don't think all 800 participated, but good use. And the facility, we're getting a lot of positive feedback on it. So
that's great.
Looking forward to the next one.
If the biggest criticism is something you can't control, like the weather, then I think you're doing a great job.
yes, absolutely. So the next, we have some other events, and I put some of those in the list here. You'll see some of those things that are planned down at the park. Obviously, the World Beat Festival is back. That's in a few weeks at the end of the month. And then the next really large event in the new amphitheater will be the Fish Fest and El Rey concerts on August the 20th and 21st. So those will be very big. They were down at the park again actually today, looking through, trying to get a layout. So we're excited. It'll be a good year.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Any other questions for Becky or comments about her report? All right. Seeing
Recreation League's going great, Becky. I'm loving
Pardon
it.
Pardon me?
I said the Recreation Softball League's going great. I'm loving it.
Have you gotten to play yet?
I have gotten to play.
Oh, good. All right. Fantastic. A couple times. Well, you're going to start somewhere. Excellent. Good. I'm glad to hear it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Becky.
Yes, you bet.
Let's go on. Is there any new business that board members would like to raise?
Dylan, you brought up Patricia and Herb no longer being with the city from retiring. What is the current efforts to fill her role, or what's the status on that?
It's a great question. Rob, there you are.
Yeah, the city is in a recruitment process. And so I am anxious to get some news myself. And I hope we would all have that news by the time you reconvene next month in July. Yeah.
Okay. So recruitment process and the posting's been up and is closed or closing soon?
That's good. The posting was last month and has closed several weeks ago. And I would expect there to be some news by the time you reconvene in July.
Great. Thanks, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Open for other comments.
Is that out? Go ahead.
I get an opportunity to ride through Minto Brown Island Park between the Courtney Bridge and the entrance to that park, driving entrance of the park off of River Road, about twice a week. And I noticed the maintenance and the upkeep and whatnot. I think our park staff should be complimented for the good work they're doing in keeping up that park and that stretch of trail, which is heavily used by a lot of people. I've noticed that they have been mowing along the edges of the bike paths, pedestrian paths, so that they stayed fully wide. That's good, and it's a safety issue a lot of ways. Thanks. I've noticed that they have posted signs where the high water has intruded into the bike path so that it, and in fact, it's so common in one place, there's a measuring pole that's inserted into the bike path so that you can tell how deep the water is. It gets up to about a foot deep there sometimes, more. And yet there's signs posted to warn you that it's ahead. So, you know, good work is being done. That's basically what I wanted to say. and I thank them.
Well said. Go ahead, Rick.
I would just like to mention, you know, it's been alluded to that Alan and I, or Al, I guess here, and I have visited every single park in Salem, and there are a lot of them. Got into parts of the city that I really don't think I've ever been in before. And I would encourage everybody to do as much of that as possible. It's very, very enlightening. And we get to see underserved areas, Joan. I just noticed there are a lot of really nice little neighborhood parks and areas. I didn't know there were neighborhood parks. Maintenance is always an issue, I know, because of lack of staff. I found a whole bunch of tennis courts that I didn't know existed. They need to be relined, but the nets seem to be good. But I just want to mention Wendy Kroger Park. I walk a lot. I walk about, when I'm not either playing tennis or golfing, I walk 2 miles a day, and I walk through Wendy Kroger Park, and they're keeping it up really well. And I did notice one day that there's this big wall in the sports area that gets graffitied occasionally. And I noticed they must have that stuff on it that you talked about the last meeting, that yeah. You can easily wipe the graffiti off, and it's taken care of all the time. I've talked to a couple of the staff people there, and they're very, very proud of their work. And it's just, Wendy Kroger Park is just a really, really nice little neighborhood park. I just want to compliment the staff. I wish we had more funding. We need a lot more funding for more staff. And I know that 70% of the work is done with volunteers, but there's a lot of work to do. And but they're doing a great job. Ian.
I think that's a really good note to end on, unless folks have other new business they'd like to flag. Well, I really appreciate Al and Rick, you know, you sharing some of those anecdotes from your time in the parks. I think that's good for us to do. And the more we all, like you said, can be out there in the parks and bringing some of those comments back, I appreciate you taking the time to do that. And I encourage all of us, including myself, I will try and make a point of that as well in terms of bringing it back here, because like you said, there's a lot of really good work happening from city staff. And I think sometimes we don't always recognize it in these meetings, and it's good for us to do. With that, our next meeting is going to be July 14th, so after the 4th of July holiday, which I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday, and hopefully we have some sunshine by then and not the rain that we are currently experiencing. Tony, is there anything you wanted to add before we adjourn?
I see you're back. Just thank you all again for endorsing the Bailey Ridge Park plan.
All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for your time tonight, and as always, being a board member, I hope you have a great evening, and the meeting is adjourned.